William, if I get one more fast blast from the women out there listening and saying how good looking you are, I'm going to shut my computer off. Gosh. Hey, the new book, of course, Oracle of the Illuminati. Tell me the basis of it.
Well, it's part of, I'm writing an Illuminati trilogy. The first book was called The Cloak of the Illuminati. And what happened in Cloak is I was tracing the myths and mysteries of this transmittable cloak that had been passed along throughout the ancient world. People such as Elijah wore this cloak. It was a magic garment that transformed an ordinary human into a figure that we call a prophet or an oracle. So in the Oracle of the Illuminati, what I'm doing is keying on the secrets of these oracular figures. Now, when you look up the word oracle in the dictionary, you find that it means something like a divine announcement,
mm-hmm.
a prophecy, a revelation, an agency or a person who's in communication with a deity. And that word communication is the key word here, because I'm through this book, I'm able to pull a lot of pieces together to show the process of here of how they were able to communicate with what we consider to be the God source.
Interesting. Now, when I say the word Illuminati, mm-hmm. I've always believed it to be that there's this hidden group of power mongers on this planet who are trying to control very, very major aspects of events on this planet.
Right.
Are these the same kinds of people you're talking about when you talk about the Oracle of the Illuminati? Same people?
Yes, we're talking about the same people, but from a slightly different perspective, from the understanding that the secrets that this group possesses are the real prize for humanity. And there are two edges to the sword of the Illuminati. You have the good Illuminati, you have the bad Illuminati. And when we go back throughout history, we find that this has been a continual battle. Earlier I referenced the second century, the early Christian manuscripts that talk about this very issue of a group of so-called bad Illuminati that are attempting to control and manipulate humanity. But into the picture is sent a good group of Illuminati, typically even referenced as the figure we know of as Jesus Christ, because when, again, you go to Webster's Dictionary, you find that the word Illuminati originally meant a newly baptized Christian initiate. And now this doesn't necessarily refer to a baptism in water as, for example, dunking someone in the River Jordan. What it refers to is a baptism in a body of knowledge or wisdom
mm-hmm.
that is symbolized by water. And so that's the interest that I have, and being very aware that throughout history there are these groups that have attempted to befuddle, to mislead, to seduce humanity, to keep us away from these secrets, but yet, going back again to these early Christian manuscripts, they're saying the focus of our life must be on how to transform ourselves as humans.
This group, though, this Illuminati group, they've been around a long time, haven't they?
From the very beginning.
Is it a family-type group, or they just keep rolling it over and over?
Well, that's the picture one gets when studying the Anunnaki, is that they're all too human in terms of their emotions. They're susceptible to family squabbles, to turf wars. And unfortunately, in their battles and the wars between the gods, humans end up being the swords.
These people, because it fascinates me, one on a conspiratorial way and the other just in the way that they search out power. They got more money than God, don't they?
Well, that's what we're led to believe, certainly. They actually manufacture money. They make it.
Yeah, I know, and I know who we're talking about. So they've got all the money they need in the world. They have their houses. They have their cars. They have everything they need in excess. The one thing they strive for is this omnipotent power, right? They want that power, and they'll do anything they can to get it, won't they?
Well, earthly power, certainly. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good point. Earthly power. What do they try to do to get beyond earthly power?
Well, that's the question, and that's kind of the kink in the armor here, isn't it? If these secrets are real, as for example, Isaac Newton is considered one of these illumined ones who was interested in finding the secrets that would enable him to become invisible, in other words, a being of light. I don't see that, you know, the top 10 Illuminati figures on this planet as being necessarily questers of that secret. If a person really knows that this is what it's all about, then they're wasting their time in terms of attempting to accumulate earthly power, because that's not going to get them anywhere. And so what I'm trying to fathom here, to understand, is where did the disconnect come in here? Are they simply being misled by these other entities that are controlling and directing the negative Illuminati on the planet? And I have to say that that's, I think, what the case is.
Are they constantly in this quest to obtain technology from I guess beyond, technology that might have been left behind by possibly extraterrestrials? Are they obsessed with it?
They're obsessed constantly with it, and in fact it's expressed throughout history in terms of four elements. If you research the stories of the Illumined Ones, the Shining Ones, the Illuminati of the ancient past, you will often run upon stories where they're attempting to claim the science of earth, air, fire, and water, the four elements. And today, those four elements have been retooled. I call them the four 21st century power tools. They're genes, bits, neurons, and atoms. And with the convergence of those four new technologies, they're all becoming one, we are in a position now to completely redesign the human being. We're literally creating a second skin for humanity based upon our understanding of computer science, of the way the brain works, of our genetics, and also with our nanotechnology. Now, these four elements have always been used to control humanity because essentially they tell us that's what we're composed of.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the right combination of those elements, mediated by the fifth element, the quintessence, the spiritual energy, will transform an ordinary human into a Christ-like being.
Oh, really?
Yes. And right now, we're in the halls of our institutions such as the Pentagon, the halls of MIT, our greatest research institutes in America. This is what they're talking about right now.
Is there anybody else ahead of us in this kind of technology?
Well, yeah, in a sense, because we're so focused on the material aspect of it here in the West that we're losing the race to those in the East that understand that this technology is not going to work unless we have the right consciousness to make it work. And so we're losing the consciousness race right now with researchers in China, with researchers in Russia that have apprehended already the mind link that is inherent in this technology. And so what we've got to do if we're going to not lose this race is develop that aspect of ourselves. And it's so dangerous because, remember, at the turn of the 20th century, the single greatest power on the planet was the British Navy.
That's true.
And so where's the British Navy today?
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
They're totally irrelevant.
Exactly.
Because of technology. And with the development of the present development, the alarming rate of development of these technologies, it can transform the balance of power on our planet in the blink of an eye.
Yep, overnight.
Yes. And that's the greatest fear, I think, that our government has right now in terms of a terrorist threat, that if a terrorist faction or cell group gets a hold of this kind of technology, it's just unfathomable, really, what they'd be able to do with it.
Well, let me tell you, Pentagon right now as we speak, they are totally baffled over what might have been used in Iraq in March to take out an Abrams tank. They said that it's got you can barely put your finger through the hole of what went through it, and then a bigger hole went out of it, and they have no idea what it was.
Wow.
You know, it was not conventional weaponry that did it. It was used in Iraq. And I'm beginning to say, you know, did they have something from the Russians or the Chinese that they were experimenting with? They only used it once. It only took out one tank, and then it was never used again. Or was it perhaps those countries on their own Maybe they were already there doing some testing and they figured, hey, let's see if this thing works. And apparently you can be a long, long way away to see if this thing works. But William, they have no idea what it is. And it was a major story in Army Times, which of course is an official Army publication.
Wow, and I'm very surprised that that even came out.
Exactly, exactly. I read that in Army Times, and I went, this isn't normal for them to release a story like that, that they have no idea what it was. And I'm beginning to think, was it laser technology or even some kind of plasma gun? So when you talk about having the upper edge in technology, somebody's been playing with something.
Right, and it's been my contention, going back to my book, The Atomic Christ, which was about FDR's search for the secrets of the Holy Grail in Mongolia, that that region of the world, including the Middle East, including Afghanistan, including China, Mongolia, was an enormous repository for the secrets of the ancient gods. Call them the Illuminati, call them extraterrestrials. There's all kinds of legends and rumors about subterranean civilizations there that are thousands of years in advance of our own technology. And when you follow the myths and legends of these civilizations, as I have, you're just absolutely compelled and at the same time just simply blown away when you realize the extent to which they match modern science. It's, again, this notion that we're rediscovering this technology that may have existed in an incredibly advanced pre-flood world. And the secrets of this pre-flood civilization and technology are scattered throughout the planet. There's not just a single hall of records in Egypt. There's halls of records all over the planet.
I kind of look at you as, you're not an archaeologist, of course, you're an investigative mythologist, but I kind of look at you as an Indiana Jones type, where you go to all these different places to try to unravel these events, supernatural events, looking for the truth. Do you continue to look for new projects? How do they come your way?
Well, it's just following the muse, so to speak. As in this instance, the Cloak book, Cloak of the Illuminati, came up because I was finding these incredible examples of this cloak that had been passed along throughout history, and that naturally led to the Oracle of the Illuminati book, the transformation undergone once one wears the cloak. So they just kind of naturally evolve, but as I mentioned earlier, the centerpiece of all of my books and research is this pillar or antenna that was brought here by the gods and is used as not only a communications device, but also has tremendous applications in terms of weapon systems and also personal spiritual applications as well. It's the unified technology of the gods.
Which you believe could be in Iraq.
Which most certainly is in the records of Iraq and could well exist in the physical domain in Iraq as well.
90 to 100 feet, 180 feet.
Yes, having a telescopic ability, yes.
Buried or hidden away?
Probably in one of the subterranean facilities that we read about. I have pointed to the marshland in southern Iraq as a possibility, but again, I mean, we did such a good job of scattering all the artifacts from the National Museum there in Baghdad that, the pieces of this puzzle are shattered like a great mirror. And researchers such as myself and others, we have just a tiny fingernail's worth of evidence that we're operating from. There's thousands upon thousands of tablets that we haven't had access to yet that I'm convinced actually point to the real technology behind what we're describing here.
What do you think it's made with, William?
Well, they called it the Palladium Pillar in Rome. It actually had been transported there from Troy in the early 300s, and this pillar was used by the Vestal Virgins in Rome, and it was actually, when you look at the stories, it suggests that it's a device that held the soul of a savior figure. And so when you look at it from the perspective that it's called palladium, and then you go and research palladium itself as an element, it's a gold alloy, you follow that trail and you find out that the Egyptians said that this pillar was lined with gold. And I asked the question, is it possible that we're talking about either gold or a gold alloy such as palladium? In that case, it would have been made from that element.
my gosh, to have that, and it's thousands and thousands of years old for that kind of technology, and even though it may have been handed down, let me ask you this. You know, we talked about what might have been on the Ark of the Covenant. Do you believe that this is what was on the Ark of the Covenant, or is this a separate object?
No, I'm convinced that there's the complete Ark of the Covenant has the base platform that we think of as the traditional Ark, the golden box.
Right.
And the description that's given in the Bible is actually, I believe, a miniature form of this larger device. And on top of that platform, and this device is featured in my books, and Dana Augustine has done a phenomenal job of bringing this to life.
Yes.
Attached to that platform is this pillar. And I was just really excited. I went to New York this summer and spent a day at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And lo and behold, I didn't know it at the time, they actually have a fresco that's 44 inches tall and about the same dimension wide in the Metropolitan Museum of Art that features this pillar in operation. It had been taken out of the Temple of Abydos in Egypt and brought to New York. And it hangs there, and it just kind of sits there in a corner, and people don't pay a whole lot of attention to it. But what you see is this incredible device that's being operated by these priests, and it's the goddess Isis that stands beside it. They call it the pillar or symbol of Osiris. And it's the device that we're describing here that the Egyptians said could drill holes in space. It looks like an antenna because that's what they said it also could do. It attracted the energy that fed the gods.
You don't think some rich person has purchased it as a collection item or somewhere in somebody's house?
Well, that's the fear. It's a fact that the books, the tablets, the pieces of ancient art come upon the private art world, and they disappear into these private collections. And from time to time in my quest, I've been invited to go see some of these private collections. One of them is the Morgan Library in New York. That's founded by J.P. Morgan, who is, of course, one of the Illuminati figures we're talking about, mm-hmm. the enemy of
Nikola right.
Tesla, who hoarded a lot of these types of art that we're describing here, and you just don't see it. It's as if they know the value of it and have taken it into their personal possession, and they keep it off the open market.
Well, as you said, it is possibly a time machine type object. They've probably gone into the future, knew what kind of stocks to buy, came back into whatever era they were living with, and made millions. That's why they got their money.
Theoretically possible, but I have to say this too, that this technology is a double-edged sword. And we have to remember that at the center of Atlantis was supposed to have been a power source that is called the Pillar of Mero, which is what we're describing here. And it was because of their misuse of this technology that led to the downfall of the Atlantean civilization, according to various sources.
What's your next appearance, physical appearance? Where are you going next?
I am going to, and I'm very honored to be going there as well, to Dr. Chet Snow's Signs of Destiny 2 conference in Tempe, Arizona, his Crop Circle conference. I'll be seeing my good friend Lawrence Gardner there and being able to confer with the Crop Circle experts on this research we've been describing tonight.
I think Linda Moulton Howe will be out there too, won't she?
Linda will be there. It'll be a great opportunity to meet her for the first time. Spoken with her on the phone, but never met face-to-face. And I love these events. I had been at the Bay Area UFO Expo in Santa Clara and had a nice chat with Richard Hoagland while there, John Anthony West. These guys are, I idolize these.
Well, you're all giants in the field.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Stay with us. When you're ready for some phone calls, let's do it. William Henry next, your phone calls as well, harmonic concordance, and some of the things we've been talking about, including stargates and much more. Your questions next. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM.
To access the audio archives of Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com.